Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Portland-based pianist Carrie Pulitzer on the new 2022 album, In a Heartbeat. With six previous albums under her belt, this mid-career musician returns with a deep and varied book of original tunes written and recorded largely during the pandemic. The jazz scene moves quickly, however, and her new album, In a Heartbeat, serves as a striking reintroduction to an artist who should be better known at this point. The last time I saw or talked to her was in person, while she was in Kansas City playing and promoting her 2019 CD, Diagonal. This new venture is her first album of originals in 8 years and pays homage to her aunt, who she lost during the pandemic. We get into quite a bit in this interview. Enjoy.
Hey, Carrie, Joe DiVino.
Hi, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How's life?
Oh, I am hanging in there. Things are crazy as usual. What about you?
Yeah, same thing. You know, it's like, I think the last time I saw you were here in town, the last time we spoke, and how would we have ever known the world was going to turn into this crazy, goofy show it's turned into?
I know. That was like my last year of traveling. It was really great. I mean, I got to go to Kansas City, and that year I did like four, I think I took like four trips, which is like, I love going places, you know? So
yeah,
it was quite a change to not even be able to practically leave your house.
Yeah, it's wild. Yeah, and, you know, I think more than anything else, the world of musicians were really turned on their ear more than anybody else, while stadiums were full of, you know, sports fans and all of that. You know, entertainment had to be held back, so it was probably particularly rough.
I actually started a house concert series on my front lawn. And in summer 2020, I mean, it was briefly curtailed by the wildfires out here, but it's now going on three seasons, and the first season especially, it was really traumatic, but I would have people come onto the lawn and they would have masks on because we didn't know that outdoors was like a little bit safer, and they would sit really far apart, but we would have people perform. I think we had like 15 concerts on my front lawn, so the audience would tip, and they were like super generous. It was like every Friday, and then the following 2 years I was able to get grants so that the musicians had a guarantee, and we've continued it. But it was especially that first year, everybody was afraid to, you know, even sit near each other outside, and I was like, you know, I had kind of thought like, is it not okay to like touch money near somebody or something? But then the second, like this year, we were more relaxed about it. I think maybe the first concert, maybe I handed out some cups of wine or something, you know?
Yeah, it's bizarre. There's been so many, you know, rules and precedences that just don't make sense. Like you wear a mask to walk into a restaurant to eat, but you take it off and keep it off most of the time. And then you put it back on if you go to the bathroom or leave the restaurant. I mean, there's so many things about this that are so weird from a scientific standpoint, you know. And without even getting into all of the silliness that went into the non-scientific things that were being thrown around. But, yeah, what a very bizarre time. But thankfully, which you play as the Black Dolphin, all of the things here in Kansas City are opening up. I'm assuming around you, life is opening back up and things are getting back?
Yeah, it's definitely getting back. I mean, I have three vaccines. I guess I need to go get another one, but I feel like, so this is kind of a couple weeks ago, I teach at University of Portland and I teach at Portland State University, and I had a kid come in and he's like, I kind of don't feel well. And then I was like, did you test? And he's like, no. And I was like, I wonder if I should do this, but I came all the way out there. I had a KN95 with me because I kind of feel like if you're in a very enclosed space, like right next to somebody in a piano room and there's no ventilation and you have the door closed, maybe, I don't know, I'd just try to protect myself as best I can. Anyway, like an hour after the lesson, the kid ends up emailing me like, oh, I feel sicker than I've ever been. I have COVID. And I was like, what? Like, I can't believe that you just basically just didn't take this seriously at all. And you knew you were really feeling like crap, but you still told me, who's like quite a bit older than you, to come in and teach you. Fortunately, I didn't end up getting it, but I had, you know, that KN95 on. That's the only thing I can think of. Maybe the mask, like, prevented me from getting it. I feel like you know, I've taken a bunch of airplane rides and worn a KN95, and I didn't catch it on the airplane. So, like, yeah. I feel a little bit more protected with those, like, those really good masks.
Yeah, and we're still in that zone where people are catching it and spreading, and there's still a lot that is technically going on, even though it's been said from the president that, you know, the pandemic is over. So, yeah, it's very uncertain. But it is very nice to see, from my perspective and my end of things, it's so good to see so much music coming through with the prospects of people being able to perform live. So before we get to that, how did you survive the pandemic? Other than, you know, you had lawn shows and things like that. How did you make it through, and how has it changed you now that you're reemerging with the new album?
Well, I guess I have a new appreciation for, you know, being able to go out and hear live music again and perform, because this was something that, aside from, especially that first summer, 2020, it was such a relief that summer to just go outside of my house and put the keyboards and amplifiers out there. I got a battery powered amp so that, you know, somebody could perform and stand far away from me. But I guess I had like a new appreciation just for the act of making music and then having other people around. That was just something that we couldn't have. And also we really supported the musical community out here. Like, now there's like all of these people that really look forward to it every summer, and they look forward to seeing each other. They look forward to the music. People are happy. It spreads a good vibe. I kind of feel like more good vibes need to be spread. You know, it's been a really difficult time, and I just want to make beautiful music and listen to beautiful music and share it with people and bring something positive into the world, you know?
Yeah, I can see this new album in a heartbeat as a neon up in a room, you know? You might want to consider that, making that emblematic.
With
all the hearts, you know what I'm saying? If you got like a bass and you put it up in a room, it would actually look pretty cool.
That's a great idea. I'd love to do that. So the album has, you know, something to do with the pandemic. I actually lost somebody super dear to me during the pandemic, my aunt, and who I dedicated the album to her. She passed away in October 2020, and because of the way everything was, I was not able to say goodbye, and I couldn't attend the funeral in person. I had to, like, there was just like this little itty bitty funeral with just two people, and I like talked to the person presiding over FaceTime or something. Like, it was the most bizarre thing. So I didn't get to pay my respects, and I just thought this album, you know, it's about like life and death and everything in between. And I thought that this would at least be a way to pay my respects to her.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I remember early on, probably that summer that you're talking about in 2020, there was a musician I was talking to from San Francisco that it seemed like, because I did more interviews than I ever did before when the pandemic started for like that whole year. And it's been pretty consistent, but there was more than ever. And every once in a while, people would say certain things. Like, I remember Al DiMeola probably around April of 2020, just very, like, confused as we all were. And this is a guy that is a very high-end musician that travels the world all the time. And he was just kind of equating this metaphorically to cancer. You know, we all have been diagnosed with this. We're all going to, you know, go through treatment together. We're all going to come out of it. Was kind of talking about how that was. And there was all these little vignettes of things that musicians were telling me. And I remember one musician said, there's going to be a very special place for all these albums that are being released now. And I think that's still the case right now with all of these coming out. There's a lot of odes to the people or memorials. And there's a lot of this that's emotionally, because, you know, music's very emotional. There's a lot of emotionally driven music that's coming out because of what we've lived through. And this is a part of that tapestry.
Exactly. It's really, we've really lived through some interesting times. I mean, just being able to see people again. And, you know, also I have two children, and we were inside for that entire year, one of them went to kindergarten online, you know. I didn't hear a lot of things were more shut down than some places. And you know, we were pretty freaked out before the vaccines came into play. So we just had internet school. Everybody was just in our house for that whole year. I mean, some people went back to school like in maybe March or April or something for like a couple hours a day or something. But we were just here. We enrolled in like an online web academy. And it was just a really, really, really strange year. And you just kind of didn't know, like, am I going to get infected by somebody? Can I hug somebody? How close can I get to somebody? It was just, I feel like maybe we have collective PTSD or something.
I've thought about that. And I think we're so close to it, we don't understand. Because I think I was interviewing some musicians there for a little while, probably around the spring of this year, that were like, one musician in particular said that they performed at a local college and there was all these eyeballs on her. It totally freaked her out. Like, you know, that was something that she was usually used to. But the enormity of people after the absence of all the people not being around totally freaked her out. And speaking of kindergartners, you know, my day job is as an IT technician in a school district. And I was talking to a teacher at one point, I think last year, when school was kind of coming back into session very tepidly. And they were just saying how the only reality that these kids understand now are masks. And it blew my mind. Like, we live these lives. We older people have all of these decades behind us. And we went through without any pandemic coming through. But these kindergartners and these kids that are living this, this is reality for them. This isn't a speed bump. This is not an anomaly. This is something that's more permanent. And that's wild to think.
It really has been just, a, you know, very unusual. And I just remember, so I have a picture. So I don't know if you remember, but at the very beginning of the pandemic, they were like, oh, this will just be locked. This will just be shut down for like, it'll just be 2 weeks. And then they're like, maybe it'll just be a month, and maybe it'll just be 6 weeks. And I took a picture of my husband and George Colligan and my two kids outside the reservoir because, you know, one of the only things that we could do was go outside for a walk, you know, far away from other people, walk around this reservoir. And this picture of them, the kids look okay, but my husband looks so grim. It's just a really deep picture because we were just, there was so much uncertainty, and we're just like, when will, we're like, is this forever? Is this the way things are going to be from now on? And then I just remember when they came up with the vaccines, just like, just the sense of joy that I felt, just that, you know, there was going to be some kind of a treatment or something. Because I just remember in the very beginning, there was just, yeah, that sense of like, is this forever? There was an article in the New York Times where like some expert was quoted as saying that this was going to be life for the next 5 years. And I just was completely in despair. And so one thing that happened that year was I had gotten a grant to have a concert and feature some Brazilian musicians here in Portland. And then because of the pandemic, they weren't able to come. So what I ended up doing in order to be able to keep the project going, we ended up doing an online Music of Brazilian Piano Masters. I collaborated with a bunch of people and we just did a bunch of, you know, taped segments, and you did the thing where like compiling tracks, you know, and videos and playing in separate cities, playing in separate places. And then we made a whole presentation. So the very first one, it was over Zoom, and, you know, a lot of people were struggling with how to stream and how to use Zoom. And this very first one, it had like a big snafu in that for 15 minutes, we were streaming to the wrong URL. And so there's all these people at this other URL on YouTube. They're like, where's the show? And I was like, oh my God. And then I had to tell the host, who's a radio host here in Portland, I'm like, you're going to have to start all over again. So we did that. And at the very end, we were supposed to have like a Q&A, but then some people had their microphone on, and the whole thing was reverberating so much into this cacophony that we had to just completely just cut it short and log off. So the second Music of Brazilian Piano Masters, you know, also during the pandemic, we decided to just record the whole thing in advance and then stream it like that. And that was a lot more successful. So we kind of had to get you know, learn a lot more skills with. And I think some people, they had already kind of been doing that. They were already like on the net all the time and on Instagram, and they got really professional with videotaping themselves and recording themselves. But I'm not like super technical like that, and I don't really like, it's just not my thing to like, you know, record myself and then you know, put it on the internet. I just feel like self-conscious or something. I'm more like an audio person than a video person. So that was kind of weird, but we did have, you know, that was kind of a wonderful experience because in a way we were still able to share music with people and communicate with people. And then the other thing that I did that was just kind of for fun, there's this program called Soundtrap that's very interactive, and it's an online DAW, and you can just log on and then you can invite your friend to a project, and you can like put on a track, and then your friend can put a track on, and then you can like make little comments to each other, like have a little asynchronous chat or something. So I had a friend in New York. I would like put down a piano track or a guitar track or something, and then she would be like singing over it, and then I would log on, and it would be kind of like a little pick-me-up to see my friend that she had communicated with me, because like it was a very lonely time.
It was, and I think that's the one thing that I've been curious about, you know, as I watched the jazz community come back to life. You know, a lot of clubs were closed, but others are opening as well. You know, I think about the fact that, you know, a lot of technical skills were kind of acquired over time, but what else do you see from your perspective that's going to make jazz strong organisms? I know we had Bandcamp Fridays. There were other things that were happening, but what are you thinking and seeing now that everything's kind of waking up that's going to make this community stronger?
Well, at least here in Portland, it seems like the city, they realized that a lot of artists were hurting, and they put a bunch of new programs together with like grants. That was one thing that I think helped a lot of people. Like, I got a grant to put on some performances, like not myself, but to hire other people to play. I got a couple to book a couple series, and that's one thing that has kind of stuck around here, just kind of like a city commitment to the arts, which I think is really cool. And then the other thing is there's, you know, this organization, New Music USA, that's given a lot of grants over the course of their lifetime, and more kind of like maybe individual project grants, but they started, you know, wanting to support local communities more. So they had this series called Different Cities, Different Voices. They actually interviewed a bunch of different artists in different cities and just talked to them about, you know, life right now and the arts and community and stuff. And they just started a grant program to try to foster performances in different cities. So I actually applied for it. I don't know if I'll get it, but I feel like maybe there's more of an awareness on the part of some organizations and at least, you know, the city of Portland that artists have, you know, lost a lot of opportunities over the course of this time, you know, and they're trying to help support the artists more. So that's one thing that I see. There's maybe just more of an awareness, like, you know, the arts need help, you know?
Yeah, they always do. And one thing I did notice, too, I've noticed over the last year or so, that's been more hyper-focused on my radar, is that Canadian musicians get grants all the time. Plus, they have socialized health care. They don't have to worry about going into bankruptcy or getting tanked if they get anything. And I think, how vital is that? You know, it's one thing for your government to say that they really care for you and the individual and they want things to go the right way. But when you actually have a government that says, we're going to give you health care that's going to be a part of your paycheck, which we already have most of ours taken out as Americans, and we're going to give you grants. And also, I remember after that New Mexico shooting, Canada, I think Trudeau actually, within a week, completely, without anybody getting in the way, put an assault weapons ban out there. And it's like, how great would that be for us to have a society that would really hold up the arts, hold up healthcare, and react to things that are as gruesome as school shootings?
You're preaching to the choir here. I mean, I have two kids in school, and this is something I have to like think about every day. So, I mean, One thing, well, on the subject of Canada, this is just maybe something other, another thing that's just kind of tangentially related. So there's two really interesting things I can think of that happened with Canada. One is there was a little, somebody figured out using, it's not Jamulus, but it's something like that. This techie guy in Canada, who's also a jazz musician, figured out a way to have performances with like almost no latency. And then he would broadcast them over ThinkSpace Live. He would have people log on, jazz musicians, and actually play simultaneously in different places. So
wow.
That was kind of amazing. And then you could log on and you could really hear that he got it within, I don't know how many milliseconds, so that it was like people actually were able to play simultaneously and then broadcast it. He actually, I tried to get him to do it here, but the internet situation here is so bad that he wasn't able to get a connection for us that didn't have a ton of latency, because I guess the signal goes all the way down to California and then up to Washington and then back to Oregon. It's like a mess. But that was one thing. And then the second thing is there was a lot more, even more kind of communication between musicians over the internet. So I got this email, and you never know with the internet what you're going to get, but I got this email from this Canadian pianist who was like, she was an expert in Latin American music, and she's like, I want to have an album of piano pieces composed for me, and then I want to get a grant and record it and perform it. And at first I was like, wait, is this real? And then it turns out she's like this amazing pianist, Dr. Andre Andeshane, and she actually is an expert. She would research obscure Brazilian composers, and she put out an album of this Brazilian composer that I had never heard of. And so I was like, wow, I guess sure, I'll write something for you. So she asked me to write her an 8-minute piano piece. And then in the meantime, since I knew that she was really into Brazilian composers, I hooked her up with Bianca Gismonchi, which is Alberto Gismonchi's daughter, who's an amazing pianist. And I also hooked her up with some other pianists in the Pacific Northwest, that Cassio Viana, who's a great Brazilian arranger, pianist, composer. And so now she's having all of these remote pieces composed for her and then sent to her online, and she's been posting videos of her practicing the different compositions. So I wrote a piece called Microclimates, because Portland has these microclimates, and sent it to her. And then I think in February she's going to record it, you know, possibly with a Canadian grant, and then do a performance of all of these pieces that she found basically over the internet.
Wow, that's great. And those kinds of things are so great to hear about. And a lot of that, I think, has to do with kind of what we've lived through over the last few years. And so I'm curious, and I'm going to do kind of a preamble to this question here. The last thing I did jazz related before the world shut down was Maxine Gordon was giving a talk at a local community college about her book on Dexter Gordon, and one of the singers here, Deborah Brown, had kind of asked me.
Deborah Brown. Oh, George raves about Deborah.
Oh yeah, she's a legend here in Kansas City. I mean, she goes to Denmark, and she's really, really, really big in Europe. But a lot of people in Kansas City, I don't think, know her as well as they should.
Oh, George, he played me. I was like, oh my God, it's kind of like, I guess, would be your Nancy King, maybe. Like,
yeah.
Somebody who just has ridiculous abilities.
Yeah. She came into one of our, an old steakhouse that was back in Prohibition days called the Majestic. She came in one time into the basement, and all of these cameras went up, and people freaked out. It was like Kansas City paparazzi, which you never see. But, yeah, she's a big deal. And I've interviewed her historically over the years, and she's wonderful. And she kind of talked to me about this series that she was going to do with Maxine. Anyways, Maxine signs my book at the end. I kind of talked to her a little bit. I walk out, and I realize the world's shutting down. And I was wavering on whether I was going to go or not. I looked out at the autograph, and I'm like, how am I going to remember this? You know?
Oh,
and then,
my gosh.
Lo and behold, March 13th, 2020 is going to be one of the most concrete, crystallized days in our human history. So I ended up interviewing her like a year later, and I said, I look at that. I framed it. And I'm like, I look at that autograph and wondered what it would mean. And now it's emblematic of like the old world. And she was like, every since that, I have always devoted myself to putting dates on every autograph from there on out. Like, it changed the way that she does things now, which is totally bizarre.
Wow.
Yeah. But
wow.
I'm curious with you, what was your last performance or last jazz act before that old world went away?
I think it was like maybe two days before it hit. Maybe it was like March 11th. We had this little winery that used to hold concerts, and I don't think that they've come back, but I was out there and we were playing, you know, a bunch of my original music, some of which would later be recorded, and I felt like I had that kind of hanging over my head, like, is this going to be like the last show for a while? And then it was just like a couple more days and everything shut down, because it, you know, you kind of got like a lot of mixed messaging. Like, at first, you know, the so-called lockdown or whatever it was kind of like, it was nebulous. The messaging was nebulous. Like, you didn't know what the rules were going to be. And, you know, nobody knew. So there was just that sense of uncertainty, you know, it was like, how long is stuff going to be closed? You know, is it okay to be outside? We just don't know. How long is it? I mean, in the very, very beginning, it was almost like optional if you wanted to, you know, curtail your activities. And then, you know, eventually everything, you know, got more and more shut down as far as places that you could be inside. Like, you couldn't really go inside anywhere. And even here, there was some stuff, I mean, this is totally unrelated, but it was kind of silly that, like, they would take outdoor parks and cordon off, like, the baseball fields. Which seems kind of silly to me because there was a lot of outdoor space. But I guess in the very beginning, they didn't realize that it wasn't as much something that you would catch from touching something. And there was just a lot of, you know, nobody knew that it was more like an aerosol kind of thing. So maybe they felt like if you touched something that it would be, you know, a fomite thing. So, yeah, but it was almost like a cloud was gathering in the sky, and the very end of the before times.
Yeah, it's weird because I always call, when this all happened, I was like, we can officially refer to that time period as BC before Corona. You know, it can actually, you know, have dual meaning to it. Yeah, and we thought, too, that it wasn't going to take that long. You were mentioning, too, about your husband and the way he looked in that picture. And I got married in July of 2019. We expedited everything.
Oh.
We moved. Yeah, so we got married. And then we moved in January of 2020, finally got our house, got everything together.
Congratulations.
Really fast-tracked it. Thank you. I appreciate it. So we do all of this stuff. And we were going to go to New Orleans, but there was a hurricane coming in, so we had a reroute. We call it the Bob Ross honeymoon because it was a happy accident. We went to Colorado, Manitou Springs, and it was wonderful. And all of the pictures come up. We have a fire stick on our TV, so all of our pictures come up. And I notice how young we looked then. And it's like we've aged like presidents, like, during this time. The adults, especially. You know, and we look at it like, my God, it was only 19, and look how young we look. And it's like, that's kind of what you're talking about in that picture. Like, the adults had this feeling of, like, animals before a tornado comes in. Like, you just felt the earth in a way that was different than other creatures, and you knew it was coming. Like, Tampa right now, you know that it's going to land, but you just don't know when and what it's going to be like, but it's going to happen. And that's kind of the way this was. It was the gathering storm. But I feel like, to a certain degree, to a good degree actually, that jazz musicians were made for this time. And this is why. You're always thrown into the unknown. You never quite know what you're going to do. You're going to do it once, and you're going to make the best out of it. Which, if you take all of those ingredients that make up a jazz musician's life, in particular on the live stage, isn't that what all of us were saying the whole time living through COVID?
Yeah, for sure.
It really is. I mean, and I know that this is the Bob Dylan moment for everybody. This is the moment for everybody to, like, if you're a creative person and you didn't have inspiration over the last 2 years, then you probably shouldn't create anymore, because this was the time that was right full of it. But more than that, I think the jazz musicians, out of all of the different genres of music and musicians, this was the time that was, you know, a part of what you all do all the time anyways.
Right. So, it's just one thing that made it a little bit harder is that everybody was, I mean, if you need to be alone to do anything, that was really hard because, you know, at least in our house, everybody, we have a pretty small house and everybody was on top of each other all the time.
Yeah.
So it was kind of hard to get a lot done.
I get it. And a lot of people that lived in, like, Brooklyn and other places that were stacked on top of each other, you know, playing an instrument and doing all that, you know, started to probably wear on people's nerves, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of situations. And there was a lot of situations there where I was talking to musicians where, you know, neighbors would watch other people that would walk outside. If you didn't have a mask, they would tell on you. It kind of turned into this Orwellian police state. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy stuff that was going on like that, you know? And it's like people just going outside and they were getting questioned and there was curfews and there was other things that were going on. It was just that it's been fascinating from my end of things to talk to people from all over the world. And now that the fog's kind of lifting, to understand, like, for instance, one musician went back to Taiwan because the restrictions and infection rates were, so then the restrictions were low because the infection rates were low, and he actually moved back home to his family. Yeah. So there's all these different things, like what was going on in Israel versus what was going on here, and how they could do things that we could never do, and all of those things worldwide. You just get so inundated with this shroud of America that you don't realize that the rest of the world has a whole different precipice they're standing on dealing with this pandemic, which is global, but we're all dealing with it differently.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You know, so I'm curious what you ultimately hope as this homage to your aunt and this new creation coming out during a time of renewal. What are you hoping a listener gets from this album?
You know, I feel like I wanted to, what I realized more than anything is just that I want to communicate a feeling to the listener, you know, something that is a moment or a mood or, you know, something that will move the listener and stay with the listener, you know, as I, you know, I mean, it's important to, you know, to play things well and to play things right. But, you know, as I get older, what I want to do more is just, you know, be in the moment and experience the music and get into a zone that kind of takes you out of yourself for a little while. And I want to just kind of do that for the listener, that if they listen to the music, they, you know, no matter what they're thinking about, they can kind of drift off and be in a little bit of a different musical space, a different headspace for a little while.
So if anyone out there wants to either stream or the best place to pick up In a Heartbeat or find out about live shows, anything related to the album in your world, where can they go?
Well, my website will have links to it. And it's also, so the album is on Portland Jazz Composers Ensemble Records and they have a Bandcamp page. And so everything will be available on there. Yeah, the title track, In a Heartbeat, was actually written after the birth of my second child. I guess that's one thing about the album too, that I just want to say is that a lot of people, and this is a common theme that you'll hear from a lot of musicians, that they were talking about music that came to them in dreams, and, you know, kind of a dream, like a lot of people had very vivid dreams during the pandemic, and myself included. And so some of the music from this album actually came from my subconscious. It came out of dreams. And In a Heartbeat, the rhythmic figure that you hear in the beginning, like that heartbeat kind of figure, that whole thing came to me in a dream and kind of wrote itself. So
yeah.
There's a couple things on there where I almost feel like I didn't write it, but it came to me. So the In a Heartbeat, the rhythmic figure is kind of, it's supposed to be like a heartbeat and to kind of symbolize life.
Well, it's kind of like that whole notion where people will say, I didn't pick to be a jazz musician. Jazz picked me. It's kind of that notion, you know, and then you just kind of run with that. You know, metaphorically speaking, it's like it comes to you, and creativity comes in very strange ways.
Very strange ways. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
That's great. I'm glad you put that in there, and thank you for taking a minute out to talk about the album. It's great to see new material out, and it's so great to see the world of jazz opening up and coming to life. I mean, there was always albums that were coming through, but there's so many more now, and there's so many just things that are going on that are positive that mm-hmm. are getting everything back, and I think it's relieving for everybody.
Oh, gosh, for sure. Yeah, but I think maybe, if I have to say one thing, maybe we just have more of a sense of gratitude for what we are able to do in these times.
You know, and I've always been cognizant of that. I talked a lot about that while the pandemic was going on. You know, I'll get press passes to shows, and I'm always grateful that I get to cover it, I get to be a part of that, and I've always really made sure that I took a moment to just take a breath in and realize what I'm getting ready to witness. And I hope that collectively everyone feels like that now, that they get to see something their eyeballs didn't get to see for years.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a very good thing. Carrie, it's been great to catch up with you. Thank you for talking about the album. And I do hope that at some point you do get a neon of this, because it would really look cool in the right room.
Well, I'm talking to somebody that thinks about neon a lot, so I think maybe
right.
You should have one too.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz Interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in Portland, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Carrie for her time, music, and story. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit neonjazz at youtube.com, and for everything Neon Jazz all the time, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.